Galilee Lake is singularly the lowest lake on the planet. As far as weather goes, what that means to those of us that grew up on the lake is that the wind that comes from the south and from the west of us off the Mediterranean is sucked down into this lowland. And at the same time, on the northeast end of the lake is the Golan Heights. And the warmer air comes from deeper into the continent and sweeps over those cliffs. And when those two pieces of weather hit, it creates incredible storms on the lake. Sometimes even creating twisters, hurricane-like. And on this day, I've never seen anything like this. It starts off normal enough, simple enough. Jesus invites us to get into the boats, and we're heading across the lake, and we hit this storm. I've spent my whole life on this lake. I know it like I know my hand. But on this day, with this storm, I was absolutely terrified. I've seen everything bad, but nothing compared to this. I was totally undone. Those of us who were, by career, people that lived on this lake, when we were terrified, the other guys that were just acquainted with the Galilee Lake, they were absolutely petrified. And we turned to look at Jesus, and he's fast asleep. He's absolutely asleep in this boat that is bucking and rocking and nearly coming out from underneath his sleeping body. And we scramble our way to the back of the boat as best we can, and we wake him. We wake him, intending to tell him that he's about to die. And in that moment, he sits up and he looks at us and he looks at the weather and he looks confused. And I'm thinking, this is not good. I think this guy is the Son of God and he's confused by this. And then he looks at us and he says, "Calm down." And in that moment, I think the weather overheard him. Because in that singular moment, the wind stopped. The waves stopped. And the boat immediately settled to a calm place on a still lake. And he looks at us again with the same incredulous eyes. And he asks, "Why were you afraid?" It was just another fisherman's boat. But they obviously were not from around here. Because if they were from around here, they would know not to pull to shore there. And we ran. We're terrorists. We see chaos and we add to it. We are a consortium of those who are intent on first noticing fear in those around us and then cranking it up a degree or two. When we saw the boat, we knew if they were from around here, they would know, do not put in there. Not anywhere near the cemetery, not by the caves where people are placed in death. And so we ran. We ran full speed. All of us charging, all of us screaming, all of us intending to create terror on a level. It was going to be a good day. That kind of stuff. And then, in a single instant, we saw him. We saw him. And in a single incredible moment, the terrorist became the terrified. And his fear rose in us. And as we panicked, we found ourselves continually running toward him, toward the one, toward the Creator. We fall before him and we say, "What have we done? Why are you here to terrorize us?" We begged and we pleaded. Oh, we groveled. I have never known fear like that. None of us had. We looked around, panicked. It should have brought us some sense of joy that everybody else that was with him were wide-eyed and terrified. That should have brought to us a certain sense of satisfaction, but there was no satisfaction. There was only terror. We knew exactly what he would do, but we begged and pleaded anyways. "Not the pit, not the pit. Please don't send us into the pit. Anything but that." But we knew we had no chance. We knew we had no hope. As we glanced around to one direction, we saw the fearful men with him. To the other direction, we saw the swine herds. We saw the men who raised pigs. Pigs that were hated by these Jewish boys. Pigs that were there in numbers. Pigs grazing lazily on the grass around us. In a panic, we said, "Not the pit, the pigs." And we waited for what seemed like an eternity for him to respond. He draws his breath and we freeze. And he says, "What's your name?" We're a legion. We're a crazed mob. It's not a single name. It's a consortium of evil that live in this one naked man. "Please, not the pit. Send us into the pigs." And we waited, and we waited, and we waited. I tried to not look into his eyes, but he never looked away. And I couldn't either. And finally he draws a breath, and again we pause. And we paralyze. And he says, "Go." And as quickly as we could, we vacated that naked man and we ran pell-mell, headlong, into the pigs. I grew up in this city, the city on the hill. It's called Hippos. It's not necessarily a religious center, but it's busy enough. It's a great place to grow up. It may not be the best, but it was mine. And frankly, I could have lived my whole life not really believing in demon possession. That's a wild thought. That couldn't be. I would never believe that. Until I began hearing the voices until I was experiencing the things that I was experiencing, and the fear began to grow in me. Sometimes it was so real and so tangible that I thought I was going to vomit. The fear and the terror grew in me, and I became desperate to keep it under control. I became desperate to not acknowledge the fear that was in me. But I couldn't stop it. And I began saying things that weren't my words. And I began doing things that wasn't like me. And finally, family started holding me off at bay. And friends that I grew up with. And there came a day when I was just too out of control. And so, in their fear, they just tried to control me. Oh, they tried to control me with ropes. And I can't explain it, but I tell you what, they don't make a rope that could hold me. Because I wasn't afraid of pain. They chained me, but they didn't make a chain that would hold me because I wasn't afraid of pain. They tried to control me with clothing. And I gotta say, the only thing scarier than a guy that's running around with chains and ropes hanging off his hands is when that guy is totally naked. And I found a new source of fear. And I inflicted fear on everybody. It welled up in me so real that I could taste it. But the truth is, I only knew that I had to get it out of me. And so I terrorized everybody I possibly could. I have moments that I remember, and far more that I don't. I lost myself. I was gone. The voices were so loud. And so finally, I found one lovely place, not of escape, but a place to create more terror. And that is, I moved into the caves, the burial caves. Down by the water's edge were these high cliffs, and there were tucked in there lots of caves and lots of bones. And so anybody that came by the grave, anytime there was a funeral, they really had to brace themselves because I was there. We were there. Me and my friends. And so the day came when a boat rowed to shore, and my first thought was, they're not from around here. If they were from around here, they would know, do not put into port there. And so I did what I always do. I ran. Wearing nothing but my chains, I ran. And that's usually enough. That's usually enough to send people running the other direction. I don't know what to do with all the terror in me. But I know there's some satisfaction, I do remember that part, in getting it off of me and onto other people. And I could see that they wanted to run. There were some of the guys that were getting back into the boat, but not him. There was one guy who was not afraid of my screaming. One guy who was not afraid of my chains. One guy who was not afraid of my nakedness. One guy who held me with his gaze and never looked away. And when I got to him, I fell to my knees. I can't really describe to you the conversation that I had with him because it was words that seemed distant and seemed like they were happening with somebody else. But I can tell you this, I couldn't not look into his eyes, because it was the gaze that I'd been waiting for and hungry for. I thought, if he can't fix me, nobody can. And I felt the fear welling up in me again. And the only part of this conversation that honestly, now looking back, I can really repeat and quote word for word was when he stared me down in silence for the longest time and he said, "Go." And in that moment, the fear and the terror that was so real and so alive and seemingly so eternal disappeared, flew away, ran away from me the way I'd been running toward these guys. Honestly, for the first time in a long time, I realized how nasty I smelled, how naked I was, and how absolutely peaceful I felt. With a look, Jesus looked at one of his friends and they snatched off their cloak and they wrapped me up. And I felt the touch of another human for the first time since I can remember. And we sat at the water's edge. And Jesus helped me to wash my face. And I combed my hair and my beard as best I could. And we talked. And he saw me. And he heard me. And I was forever changed. I've entitled this message tonight, "Now What? Now You Are Ambitious." This is taken from Matthew chapter 7. I'm about to read to you 5 verses only. But if you hear these words, not just with your ears, not just with your mind, but with your heart, these 5 verses will change your life forever. Not hyperbole, not saying preacher words, but I'm telling you there's power in what you're about to hear Jesus say. Listen to chapter 7, verses 7 through 11. Jesus said, "Keep on asking, and you'll receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking, and you'll find it. Keep on knocking, and the door will be open to you. For everyone who asks receives. And everyone who seeks finds. And to everyone who knocks, the door will be opened." You parents, if your children ask for a loaf of bread, do you give them a snake instead? Or if they ask for a fish, do you give them a stone? Of course not. So if you who are sin-filled, if you know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Heavenly Father give good gifts to you if you ask Him? I was thinking about ambition. And thinking about that message to parents. If your children ask for bread or ask for fish, are you going to give them a stone? Are you going to give them a rock? I started thinking about a time when all of our children were home, but more importantly, all 8 grandchildren were there. Sullivan is our youngest grandchild. I forget how old she was at the time. But she had fallen in love with books. And in the chaos that was going on around her, she was carrying around a book. And she could say the words clearly because her vocabulary was beyond her peers. "I want a book." And she would take it to parents and to grandparents and to cousins and to siblings. This child was ambitious. She had a need that she could articulate it. It may not be shared with those around her, but she was undaunted. She was relentless. I forget who it was that actually sat down with Sully and read her the book that she needed to hear, but I can guarantee you it was somebody. Somebody. She was ambitious, but I gotta say, even though that story pops into my head, it's not enough. She wasn't ambitious. Ambitious sounds like something that you have a goal, and so you take these steps to move toward the goal that you've chosen. Ambition is something that is, it's more of the head than it is the heart. So while, yeah, she may have been ambitious, you know a better word? She was relentless. She didn't really have anything else in mind other than to make clearly known her wishes and her needs. Jesus has this message to the people that are saying, okay, we're into the kingdom. And he says to those people, you keep on keeping on. Don't give up. Ask. Seek. Knock. Pursue this. Ask again and again. I'd now like to paraphrase Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 11. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and it will be given to you. Knock, and it will be given to you. Because you ask, it'll be given to you. And if you seek, it'll be given to you. And if you knock, it'll be given to you. You think Jesus was trying to say something here? Anytime something is really important in Scripture, it gets repeated. Anytime something is important, it gets repeated. Anytime something is important, it gets repeated. I really needed to hear this week because I was in the middle of some prayer time and I was just saying some prayers. I was just saying some lovely, moving, tender words that came right out of my head and my history and my habits and had nothing to do with my heart. And there's something about a child begging that takes us to a deeper level, that takes us to a different place. Jesus said, when you start repeating things, it tightens the focus. It makes things clearer. You put more words to the things that are stirring in your heart. Jesus was the same one that in Luke 18 said, Jesus told his disciples a story that showed that they should always pray and never give up. Let me interrupt Luke to say, when should we give up, class? When should we give up, class? When should we give up, class? Jesus spoke to his disciples a story that showed that they should always pray and never give up. There was this judge in a certain city, and he said, I don't fear God or people. And it was true. But there was a widow in that town that came to him repeatedly. And each time she said, please, Your Honor, give me justice in this dispute that I have with my enemy. But the judge ignored her. He ignored her for a while. But finally he said to himself, I do not fear God, and I do not fear people, but this woman is driving me crazy. I'm going to see that she gets the justice that she wants because she's wearing me out with her constant request. Then the Lord said to his friends, learn a lesson from this unjust judge. Even he rendered a just decision in the end, so don't think God will surely give justice to his chosen people. Don't you think he'll give that justice to those who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? Let me interrupt to say, when should we cry out according to Jesus? Day and night. When should we cry out to Jesus? When should we cry out to Jesus?
Day and night.
Day and night. We are to cry out to Jesus relentlessly, undaunted, unstopped, not slowed down, with a tight focus. It's not about him hearing. He heard us the first time. It's about us hungering. Day and night, never give up. Day and night, never give up. Renovatus, day and night, never give up. Our friends that are online tonight, day and night, never give up. We heard a story about a sailor. We heard a story about a mob. We heard a story about a wild man, but I didn't finish the story because there was one more set of characters. I didn't finish with the sailor, the mob, and the wild man. They all felt fear, whether it was the storm, whether it was the naked guy, whether it was the demons, whether it was the pigs. When the pigs received all of those demons, they knew exactly what to do, and they charged toward the water, and they went over the cliff and right down into the water until they drowned. Then there's left the pig herders with wild eyes going, we better take this message to the pig owners in town. And so they scramble into Hippos and they say, there's something going on down at the cemetery. And they know what that means, and they know who that means. But these are the guys that are the pig herders. And so they leave the town, they scramble down the hillside, and they see the guy. And he's sitting. And he's cleaned up. And he's talking. And he's wearing clothes. And they are freaked out. They've never seen this. They can't quite remember this happening. They know something dramatic is happening. They can see the pigs bobbing in the lake. They've heard all of the story, but now with their eyes, and their response is fear. But they're not afraid because of the pigs bobbing. They're not even afraid of the wild man who's wearing clothes. They're afraid of the one that said, go. They're afraid of the one that said, what are you afraid of? They're afraid of the one that says, calm down. And so the storms did. Of all the things that they shouldn't have been afraid of, that's who they're afraid of. And so they said to Jesus, You need to go. The way they dealt with their fear was to make Jesus go away. They saw the change and the transition, but that still terrified them. And so they needed Jesus to go away. And the wild man, I'm sorry, the former wild man says, Jesus, go with me. I have no history here anymore that I can reclaim. It's too late for me. I'm in. I believe you. I trust you. I want to stay with you. I want to be one of the guys in the boat with you. And of all the things that are going to be powerfully happening out of that boat from then on, Jesus says,
Here's what I want you to do. Go home. Guys, we sing a song tonight with Jana. We sing that I am not alone. But in the middle of that, we talked about walking through the valley of fear. And I need to ask you, what are you afraid of? What is it that's rocking your boat? What has you undone? What is it when you stop striving, when you stop scrambling, when you start filling your day full of busyness, and you finally sit still and are calm? What grips your belly tighter and tighter? So here's Kevin's message to us. Yeah, me included. Pray day and night. Stop giving up. He does listen to you, and why wouldn't he listen to you? He adores you. You are free in Jesus to make bold requests, crazy, strong, confident, competent requests. It's not because of your boldness, but because of the relationship that he's invited you into. And for me to ask over and over and over and over and over and over and over again only clarifies in my heart how desperately I need that relationship with him. In October of 1941, Sir Winston Churchill was invited to speak at the Harrow School for Boys, where he was once headmaster. He was supposed to take several minutes, and he stood up, and the room grew silent, and I shall now read his entire speech. Get comfortable. Never give in. Never give in. Never, 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 never in nothing, great or small, large or petty, never get in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming mighty acts of the enemy. Never. The one in England at that moment that was fully equipped said, "Don't you give in." But bigger than that, the one who created every freckle on your face, the one who made your hair curly or straight or missing, the one who chose your gait and how you carry yourself, the pigment of your skin, the gap between your teeth, that one says to you, don't give up. Keep asking. Continue. Pursue. Persevere. Be constant. Unrelenting. Unremitting. Tireless. Interminable. Insistent. Relentless, incessant. The time for chasing shadows is over. The time for living in fear can be behind you if you will trust him. It doesn't mean the emotion isn't there. It doesn't mean the wounds aren't real. It means there's a God who's got this. And you ask tonight. And if it doesn't change tonight, you ask throughout the night. And if it doesn't change tonight, you ask tomorrow. And day and night, and day and night, you carry your cries to him. Be relentless, because Jesus is relentless. It's his quality. It's his character. And if you want to be like him, then you need to be relentless as well. It's in your DNA. Now what? Now what? Do you hear him asking the question? What are you afraid of? He asks. In clear and commanding tones, he says, calm down. With love in his eyes that won't blink, that will look past your chains and see the beauty and the good that he placed within you. He says, you are relentless.